From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, New York passes the toughest in the nation gun law. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts on the new legislation, and we'll have reaction from mental health advocates to the new law's impact on those with mental illness. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The unique new governing coalition in the New York State Senate passed its first test on the first full day of session this week when senators approved a sweeping gun control package urged by Governor Cuomo. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Senator Jeff Klein, the leader of the five-member faction of Democrats known as the Independent Democratic Conference, took a gamble breaking away from the rest of the Democrats and forming the dominant governing coalition with the now 30 Republican senators. Senator Klein says on the first day of the session, the new alliance worked.
A lot of people were saying that getting a strong gun bill passed was the first test of the majority coalition. And if that's the case, I think we passed with flying colors. This was important. This is something we had to act on immediately, and I think we did that. And I think the result is the strongest gun law in the nation.
Senator Klein says working with the GOP senators actually improved the package of bills.
Negotiation is not a dirty word. It's a part of effective governing, and I think that's the result that we saw in this bill. Remember, I want to ban assault weapons, which we did. We want to ban high-capacity magazines, which we did. We want to keep guns out of the hands of the criminally mentally ill. We can do that. But at the same time, I think this bill was made stronger because of the criminal penalties advocated by the Republican conference.
Senate Republican leader Dean Skelos and other GOP senators were strategically silent on the gun measure for most of the long day. Senator Skelos finally spoke at around 10:30 p.m., shortly before the vote was taken. Skelos was able to point to provisions in the bill that the GOP likes and to downplay the assault weapons ban, which might cause backlash in more conservative Senate districts.
This is going to go after those who are bringing illegal guns into the state, who are slaughtering people in New York City in particular, and this is going to put people in jail, and it's going to keep people in jail that shouldn't be out on the street in the first place.
Senator Skelos was asked if the Republicans had sole control of the Senate, would they have put the gun bills on the floor for a vote?
I don't speculate retroactively, but nobody thought gay marriage would come out for it.
Republicans controlled the chamber when they permitted the vote to legalize gay marriage in 2011. Three of the four GOP senators who provided swing votes are no longer in office. In both the gay marriage and the gun control vote, Republicans conceded to put the legislation on the floor, but they did not have to provide the majority of the votes to pass it. Many GOP senators voted no, including Senator Betty Little, who represents the North Country, and Senator Tom Libous, who represents Binghamton in the Southern Tier. And not all were happy about the results on day one of the new Senate governing alliance. Senator Kathy Marchione, a Republican of Saratoga, beat out pro-gay marriage Senator Roy McDonald in a primary. She complained that rank-and-file members had little time to examine the bill.
We get legislation on our desk for less than 20 minutes, and we're voting on something through a message of necessity.
The message of necessity is a tool used by the governor to forego the required 3-day waiting period for legislation. And Senate Democrat Ruben Diaz said in a statement that the new coalition used the other Democrats who had been consigned to minority party status in order to get the bills passed. Senate Democratic leader Andrea Stewart Cousins agrees that without her members, the gun package would never have become law.
I think everybody can count, obviously. Our 26 votes made the difference. It's not even about significant. We made the difference. Democrats passed the bill last night.
Senator Stewart Cousins points out that many of the ideas in the bills were first proposed by Democratic senators. But she sees the vote as evidence that her conference and the independent Democrats will eventually reconcile. The current governing coalition will falter, and the Democrats will eventually control the chamber. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, Governor Cuomo and the legislature passed the toughest in the nation gun law this week, beating President Obama, beating Connecticut lawmakers, where all of this came out of with the Newtown, Connecticut massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School, a test of the new leadership coalition in New York as well. That was the focus of Karen DeWitt's story. What do you make of the new gun law?
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of getting guns off the street. I mean, I think one less gun is one less person who can do something, of course. Background checks are terribly important here because we do know that people have access. The other thing is that there's a massive public relations benefit to all of this. I mean, think about this. So a Sandy Hook shooter gets it from another place, or somebody else gets it from the father or the mother. In that case, fathers and mothers know that they're going to be held responsible. It's just like the parents who give liquor to kids and booze them up, and now they go to jail for having done that. In addition to the actual laws and the prohibitions, comes a sort of public consciousness that we have to do something about this and that people will be held responsible for it. So I think Andrew Cuomo gets tremendous credit for having done this. There's somebody said to me the other day, one wag said to me the other day, yeah, well, that's because he's on the way to the White House. Mm. I said, I don't care. If you do good things, if you raise the minimum wage, if you get guns off the street, then that's what democracy is about. Then you deserve to get good grades. On the other hand, if you do something like put fracking in, which a lot of people think he's going to do, then you get hurt politically by doing that.
Well, of course, the ban here, the limitations, the further limitations in New York will include the definition of assault weapons, banning semi-automatic pistols, rifles, detachable magazines, and one military-style feature, as well as semi-automatic shotguns with one military-style feature. However, what I'm interested in is we see, as soon as this law passed, lines. In fact, our Dave Lucas has a story on this week's show, forming at gun shops.
Yes, and not only that, you see gun stocks going up on the market.
Right.
Nevertheless, look, in order to understand what's going on here, you have to understand that there's a certain amount of paranoia in every population. That's why I have a very good security system in my house. I've gotten threats. I do that. There are people who honestly feel that having a gun will protect them. And there are some very good gun owners. I don't happen to be one who likes the idea of somebody going out in the woods and killing deer. But, hey, we kill cows in order to eat. There are people who are natural hunters. It's a way of life in their families and the rest of it. But somebody who really has a history of terrible violence and who has orders of protection against them and who have mental health, major mental health problems are people we should know about. Now, that's where it gets a little complicated.
Right.
Because one of the things that I thought was ill-advised in this hastily pushed-through bill was putting the onus on the therapists in mental health relationships and saying, if you hear somebody say something and you think it's credible, you have to report that person to the authorities, to the police. Well, anybody who knows anything about mental health knows that the day that a mental health professional says something to the police about something that was said in the confines of a therapy session, be that a priest or a pastor or a psychologist or a psychiatrist, that therapy is essentially over because there'll be no trust between the two. So now, instead of the authorities having to take the responsibility for ferreting this material out, and that is, you know, that we have given guns to somebody who we shouldn't have given a gun to, doing the right kind of background check, they have now said to the therapist, this is your responsibility. And if you don't do it, presumably you're going to get held responsible. That is something that I think is going to have to be tweaked in the law. I think Cuomo did it because he had to give some cover to the Republican senators who represent many of the upstate hunting and other place districts who have been yelling all along with the NRA, this is a mental health problem. So they did something that was ill-advised. You could do it better. I think that if you look at President Obama's published rules that he's changing, the administrative changes, I think you find that there are many ways, and there's a lot of information out there that can be used to find people who shouldn't own guns. But to do it at the expense of the therapeutic process, which brings me to one other thing, and that is I'm a great believer that there are many people who really need some help. And our mental health system in New York just is really deficient. It's awful. And in fact, I wrote my doctoral dissertation about this in New York, about freestanding mental health centers where people could go. And when we emptied out the mental hospitals, we said we were going to have these things. We never really have. You know, there are a few here or there show things, but no, nothing like we should be doing. So part of what we should be doing is building a real mental health system in New York State. And we just need to do that. And we haven't done it. And this is sort of a cheap shot.
Alan, one of the other things in the State of the State address that I haven't heard talked much about has to do with this controversy. We spoke about it on the Gazette that erupted at the Journal News. Now, that's the daily newspaper that published the names and addresses of handgun permit holders in Westchester and Rockland counties. And it's caused quite a stir. And in this legislation, it says it would prohibit disclosure of names in the new statewide gun registration database and would allow individuals to exempt their own names and addresses from being disclosed by counties that have such databases. What do you make of that?
Bad news. There are two major concerns I have in the gun law. That's the second one. The first one, of course, is the mental health piece, which puts an unfair onus and a stupid one on the therapists who are doing their work. Let me just say that publishing the names of people who have guns seems to me to be a very good idea. I'll tell you why. I'm sitting in my house. My little boy is going out to play next door, and he goes into a house with a gun. Pretty soon, somebody gets a gun that should have been put away or put under lock and key. How do we know this happens? Because it happens all the time. We're always reading about it in the paper. They point the gun, they say, boom, and somebody's dead. I need that information, and I think every New Yorker needs that information. The more information we have about some of these folks, the better off we are. You can get that information because it's available through government agencies and through others. And that's what President Obama is trying to do here, loosen up the way in which we get that information and some of the things that block our getting that information. So the way that I see it is the Journal News had every right to do it. I happen to admire the fact that they did it. And I think this is a terrible concession to make to a couple of loudmouth senators, one of them a guy by the name of Ball, down from Putnam County. You know, just this is a way you make sausage at the end of the legislative session in the middle of the night. You start giving away things you shouldn't give away.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The new firearms limitations passed in New York State include provisions that restrict those with mental illness from gun ownership. While mental health advocates don't have a problem with tightening the state's gun laws, they're concerned that the mental illness clauses could inadvertently create more problems. More from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The New York State Secure Ammunition and Firearms Enforcement Act assures that mentally ill and dangerous individuals cannot own or obtain a firearm. The restrictions require mental health professionals to report anyone they believe is likely to cause harm to anyone. Any firearms owned by those individuals will be confiscated and licenses suspended. Outpatient treatment is extended from 6 months to a year and will follow the person if they move. National Alliance on Mental Illness of New York State Executive Director Don Capone says they have supported some of the provisions in the bill.
Extending the duration of the orders, having the assisted outpatient treatment order follow a person from one county to another if they were to move. These are things that we've supported previously.
But Don Capone feels wrapping mental health issues with gun control following a tragedy is inappropriate.
We shouldn't have to have a tragedy occur before people start to think about mental health care. The discussion, in our view, should be about ease of access to mental health professionals, having treatment available when and where people need it. Unfortunately, that discussion about mental health issues now gets tied into gun control and automatic weapons and things like that. We would rather the dialogue and the debate be about what we need to do in this country and in our society related to improved treatment and services for people struggling with mental illness.
Mental Health Association in New York State CEO Glenn Liebman says they, too, are concerned about some of the mental health pieces in the bill.
I know this was not the motive of any legislator or the governor, but it continues to raise the stigma of mental illness. There is this public perception that people with mental illness are likely to commit violent acts. When study after study, and this is not advocates talking, this is researchers and scientists telling us that people with mental illness are 12 times more likely to be victims of violence than perpetrators of violence. So what happens, unfortunately, when people are hearing about the legislation, it means that less people are going to utilize community-based services because of the fear of the stigma of mental illness.
Liebman is concerned that New York's bill does not delineate the types of mental illness nor the varied treatments that are needed.
My colleague Harvey Rosenthal has phrased this very well. We are sort of the garbage pail where every diagnosis from depression to bipolar, everything is sort of into that mental health bucket. And when you see situations that are so horrific, automatically it's assumed it's a mental illness issue. When the reality is there are some people who are just evil. And what I've been saying to legislators is that this is an opportunity for us to pivot to work on legislation that will provide the services that people need, that will talk about early intervention, that will talk about medication access, all the services that we need that we know work in the community.
The advocates note that two-thirds of people who need mental health services in the country do not receive them.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Since the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, sales of guns around the country have picked up. And this week, after the passage of New York's toughest in the nation gun law, sales of guns and ammunition at shops across the state were brisk. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was out shortly after the law passed and spoke to gun shop owners about the new law.
Gun shop owners saw increases in sales begin within a week of the Sandy Hook Elementary School incident as talk spread about imposing stricter gun control measures. Sales are off the chart. Lines of vehicles along roadways leading to gun stores, citizens anxious to purchase equipment before Governor Andrew Cuomo's sweeping gun reform measures take effect. New York State Rifle and Pistol Association President Tom King.
I don't think I've stopped. Everybody, I mean, this is a big story, obviously, and everybody wants to know what's going on. And you know what? So do I. I've read the bill. I had an attorney look at it. I think there is so much confusion going around with this. I don't think anybody knows exactly what the bill says.
Linda Fitzpatrick owns Lynn's Leisure Time Gun Shop in Davenport, Delaware County.
It's been absolutely crazy. Our sales have at least doubled this year, and the last few weeks, we just can't keep up with it. We can't replace the guns we've sold. We can't replace the ammo. It's just sold out.
What about today?
We've been very busy today.
Glenville resident Chuck Zizicki was among dozens of customers crammed into a suburban Albany gun store.
Very interesting being here today, just observing what I see here. I was at the gun show in Saratoga also Sunday. Never seen such a turnout. I've gone to it for the last 15 years. Tremendous turnout.
Do you think they're overreacting?
I do. It's just a just what you said, an overreaction of what shouldn't have happened but did, and this is what we're saying.
Linda Fitzpatrick shares some of her concerns about the future of the gun business.
The fear of the new laws has made people run about buy guns. The ones I have left, I can't sell. I can't order them and sell them. And they're talking about doing background checks on ammunition? I mean, that's crazy. Just trying to sell this many guns. It's been so busy with the guns that there were times when we were on the phone for 45 minutes, just on hold for 45 minutes, trying to get through to do the background checks. So if we have to do them for the ammunition, I mean, that you sell all the time, a lot more than the guns. So how are we going to get through to do the background checks?
Tom King has a warning for Republicans who voted in favor of the new gun laws.
I have no issues with gay marriage. But if you look at what happened to three of the four senators that voted for the gay marriage bill, who, by the way, the governor, you know, promised to protect, they're no longer in the Senate. The storm that is going to hit the Senate regarding the Second Amendment issues, the gay marriage issue will look just like a blip on the radar.
King expects heavy support for candidates who take strong pro-Second Amendment stances during the next election cycle. He says political fallout is inevitable.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. New York State first responders have had plenty of opportunity to put their training to the test over the past 2 years during extreme weather events like Hurricane Sandy and Tropical Storms Lee and Irene. Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reports now on research that's hoping to make their challenging job easier, starting from the ground up.
Tyler Hale is a 25-year-old volunteer firefighter with the Cayuga Heights Fire Department. Wires connecting small plastic sensors snake up his arms and legs and down his back. Heju Park, an assistant professor at Cornell, is directing Hale while recording his movements on a laptop.
The system keeps checking and recording the continuous change in range of motion at each joint.
Park's goal is to test the difference between the rubber boots commonly used by firefighters and leather ones.
Okay.
Eventually, Hale climbs into his firefighting gear and slips on his boots, the rubber ones first. As Hale walks around the room, Park watches an avatar mimic the firefighter's movements on a monitor. A column on the right-hand side shows the data collected by those plastic sensors. So far, he's found the leather boot can support a wider range of motion than the rubber one. And that, says Park, can make a big difference for a firefighter.
People tend to believe that number one, injuries for firefighters is probably burn injury, but surprisingly, it's not the truth.
In fact, it's not even close. According to the National Fire Protection Association, 22% of the injuries to firefighters each year are from burns or smoke inhalation, while 40% are from things like muscle strains and pain. These are the sorts of injuries that better equipment might help to prevent. According to the firefighter Hale, he could tell which boot was better right away.
Putting on those leather boots is like putting on a pair of running shoes.
It doesn't take a mountain of data and painstaking research to figure out that firefighter's gear makes the person carrying it sore. But besides the predictable neck and back pain that results from carrying an air tank, Park says the body responds to weight in some other, less obvious ways. When a person straps on an air tank or any heavy weight on their back, they lean forward to keep their center of gravity in line with their legs.
That is actually natural body adaptation to prevent the injuries. Mm-hmm. But if you stay in that posture for a long time, your lower back stretches the disc, and then finally, over time, you will have a low back pain.
A good shoe can help by absorbing more of the ground's impact. Rubber boots are still much more common among firefighters, according to Hale, because they cost about $200 less than the leather ones. But they might be worth the extra cost to a town or a city. According to a Department of Commerce study, firefighter injuries cost anywhere from $2.8 to $7.8 billion every year when you factor in workers' comp, long-term care costs, and lost productivity. In Ithaca, I'm Matt Richmond for the Innovation Trail.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Astro program number 1303. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gastina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers. representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.